You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe Podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastion.
This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan and Boss Shot Shells.
The main thing, honestly, is repetition. After 4 months of training, they're going to be steady. They're going to deliver to hand. They're going to kind of understand decoys out in the water, retrieving off a dog stand and stuff like that. But they haven't had the repetition of every day we come out, I sit until my name is called. I don't move. I don't make a peep. She could say five other dog names and I'm still not going to move. The key, in my opinion, is the repetition of this is the routine every time. And the further you go in training, so like once you have a senior level dog, they're going to see the excitement of watching another dog work. They're understanding that if it's not my turn, it's not my turn. And I just lay here, I chill out, it'll happen eventually.
Today we are on day 5 of my 12 Days of Hunting giveaway. Sponsors and partners of this podcast have put together a pretty incredible lineup. What's cool is that there is something new each day, and in addition to that item, you will also receive all of the items given away before that. So be sure to follow my Instagram and Facebook pages for the Bird Dog Babe to find out how to win each day. One of my title sponsors, Purina Pro Plan, are the biggest contributors to this giveaway. Just wait and see what they're sponsoring for the grand prize. Oh my lordy. Purina is the biggest supporter of our events for the breeders and canine health research. Pro Plan is what fuels my dogs year-round in tests, trials, and hunting season. Boss Shot Shells, today, Tuesday, August 24th at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Boss is doing an inventory dump. So be sure to watch for that and get your ammo ordered. The shortage is real, folks, and this isn't something you should have procrastinated on. However, there's also the fact that I'm giving away one box of Boss until September 1st, so you'll have that opportunity at least. Siren, I just returned home from Project Upland's instinctual wing shooting camp in Minnesota this past weekend, and what an awesome time that was. My amazing partners at Siren, Fabarm, and Cesar Guarini sent quite a few demo guns for people to try out. I have no doubt everyone there will be putting more birds in their bags this season. Dakota 283, you still have a couple weeks to get in on my big giveaway with Dakota 283. This one is exclusive to my Patreon patrons, and they're contributing $5 per month on patreon.com/thebirddogbabe. Give the podcast a rating and review, then send me a screenshot to be sure I have you entered. If you need to get a kennel or a dine and dash now, then use promo code BIRDDOGBABE to get 10% off. My guest today is Alex Brittingham of One Shot Retrievers. Alex has trained and tested many retrievers through Senior and Master Hunter AKC hunt tests, but when it comes down to choose which dog she wants next to her in the blind and on her bed, she prefers the power, determination, and pure grit that's jam-packed into the short legs and little body of a Jack Russell Terrier named Gator. All right, let's get after it. Hey, Alex, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Courtney, how are you?
I am good. Thank you so much for joining me for this. I've been wanting to have you on for a while and hear some of the backstory and what you all have going on down there in Texas. Tell listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do. Give me that elevator pitch.
Okay. Well, my name is Alex Brittingham, and I own One Shot Retrievers, which is a retriever training facility, but we also do boarding and obedience. And I started training dogs probably 12 years ago, but that was just my personal dogs. And I just did it for duck hunting at one point. And, then I kind of got into hunt tests and stuff like that. And then I obviously, had a little Jack Russell that liked to retrieve, and we used to take him duck hunting. And so then when he passed away, I got another one, and then that's been something that has kind of consumed my time during hunting season lately. I feel like I don't even bring my labs anymore. I just bring my Jack Russell. So that's kind of what I do anyway. I spend most of my time training dogs, and then during hunting season we duck and goose hunt and dove hunt a little bit during the first, you know, part of September. And I mean, for the most part, that's it. I don't have it's pretty straightforward, boring life.
Yes, no, your life looks way less than boring, but
it's not boring. It's just very routine, I guess.
Sure. So one-shot retrievers, and your nickname is One-Shot Lou. So yes. how did that come about?
Well, actually, I think I was 8 or 9 years old, and it was right around the time when everybody was getting an email address, and my parents had just gotten a computer, and, I'm sure they had one before that, but my brother was creating my siblings and I, email addresses, and he came up with that as my email address. It was oneshotlou@aol.com. And so that's where it came about. My nickname was Lou growing up, so everybody called me that. My family called me that. And then, we deer hunted a lot and, hunted in Africa a lot and stuff like that. So that was just kind of a nickname. Like that wasn't actually the case, but it was a nickname they came up with for me. So
I like it. So you're saying it wasn't necessarily that
it wasn't that I was
a good shot.
Making one shot on it. Okay. Yeah, exactly. That was not the case for sure, but it was just kind of a joke. And then it stuck. After that, it became, my Instagram account. And then I was having the hardest time trying to figure out, what to name the retriever training business. And I mean, I had all these different names written down, and I hate to say it, but I feel like everyone's, you know, it's always something retrievers or something kennels. And, mine ended up being one-shot retrievers, but I was actually, I think, talking to Lee Chose about it. And he was like, why wouldn't you just name it after yourself? Like One-Shot Lou. And I was like, well, it does kind of flow, and nobody else has named their kennels that. So I'm just not very creative. So that's kind of where it came from, but it actually has turned out great. You know, everybody seems to really like the name, and it's worked
awesome.
Out.
That's so cool. So you hunted when you were young. Did you waterfowl hunt, big game hunt? What did you start with?
So mostly it was big game. We did a lot of, we were in and out of Africa a lot when I was younger. I think we went like 7 times or 8 times. And then we did a lot of elk hunting, deer hunting, bear hunting. Just honestly, I didn't duck hunt until I was in college. I went a couple times with my dad, a handful of times, but I wasn't really into it. Honestly, it was something that kind of intimidated me because, you know, when you're duck hunting, you're with a big group of people, and if you don't shoot fast enough or well enough, then you're obviously not going to hit anything. And, you know, in my family, which I appreciate, and the people that I duck hunt with don't treat me like a girl. They're not like, wait for it to land on the water and then you can shoot it on the water. It's like, you know, survival of the fittest kind of thing. And so I love that, and I appreciate that, because I wouldn't be, you know, where I am today as far as like being able to actually shoot ducks had I not been treated that way, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'd still be kind of like right there on the, I'm going to wait for like one that lands, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so that's kind of like, at first it was really intimidating. And then I just finally was like, you know what? I really enjoy this. Once I got into college, I just had more confidence and I had a dog. And so I really just started like just shooting at everything, even though sometimes I was like shooting at the sky. Mm-hmm. And it just gave me the confidence to finally now it's like, you know, it's like second nature for me, but But at the time, I felt very out of my element compared to shooting a bow or a rifle or something like that.
So your dad and your brother, you have one brother. Is that, you have
two
siblings?
Two brothers.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. So they all hunted. Did your mom hunt as well?
She did. Not really though. I mean, like, she doesn't hunt now. She has no problem with hunting at all. It's just not really her thing. I mean, she didn't grow up hunting or anything like that, but I mean, we always went together as a family. Like if we went to Africa or, Alaska or somewhere like that.
She was always there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. She always participated. I mean, she was there. I shot a bison in Montana one time and a black bear and she was there. I mean, you know, she was always, participating, but she just didn't really hunt herself.
Mm-hmm. Really neat. You said you had a dog in college. What breed of dog was that?
He was a black lab, and I had also, a Jack Russell too.
So are those the breeds that you had growing up? Or is that, how did that come about?
Yeah, we had, we always had black labs growing up. And then, we had one Jack Russell when I was 5 he lasted, because they're Jack Russells and they tend to get into trouble, right, and not live their full life expectancy. Mm-hmm. So, he lasted until he was 9, and he actually, used to run off a lot. And we think he got killed by hogs, but, I mean, he had 9 lives, I swear. I mean, it was every other day he's getting bit by a snake or, you know, something going on. I mean, and the lab, you know, the Jack Russell lab combination was always a really good combo. Jack Russells are, you know, obviously they can be kind of aggressive and stuff, and
right,
labs are very submissive. And so it always worked out. I mean, we had, Hank, and then we had another lab, and then we had Moose, and then I can't remember. We had a couple docks in a row, but anyway, we always had a Jack Russell in a lab, and it just worked out great, and still does. So,
the Jack Russell, when you grew up, did your dad have the Jack Russell out there hunting with the lab too, or was that just a family pet?
No. No, he was a family pet. We lived on a ranch and stuff like that. So, I mean, he would absolutely chase down and kill anything that he could get his little paws on. But, as far as like the duck hunting goes and, you know, quail and dove hunting, that started with Moose, which was a Jack Russell that we got when I was 15. I just kind of would throw a tennis ball for him. I didn't know anything about training dogs then. And my family, nobody in my family really knows how to train dogs. We just would throw a tennis ball for him. And then, you know, I think my dad may have taken him on like on a quail hunt or something one time and realized that, you know, hey, he'll go get it and bring it back. Like, you know, he'll drop it at your feet, but he'll bring it back. And so that's kind of where that started. And then we started taking him duck hunting. And he would, sure enough, I mean, it could be, you know, 25 degrees outside and he'd jump in the water and go get a duck and come back. And
oh my
I'm
gosh.
Like, you don't have dog vests on or anything. He didn't care, you know. He was pretty hardcore in that way. But, you know, it was kind of hit or miss. You know, you'd take him out there and didn't really, sometimes if he was in a mood, he might not go get the bird, or he might stop halfway and chew it up. You know what I mean? Right.
Sure.
But he was a tool, so.
Yeah. So how did that transition come to be where you had the black lab and Jack Russell in college to the transition to becoming a trainer?
Well, I got the black lab from my dad, who wasn't really pleased with where his training was going. And so I said, well, let me take him, because I kind of am getting into duck hunting and I think I could probably learn how to work with him and get him to a level that I could use as a college kid duck hunting. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to be picking up as many birds as he would be. And just so I just said, let me just take him. And so he gave him to me and I started working with him, and And then finally I sent him to a trainer. Well, he had this really weird, bizarre situation where you're going to think I'm crazy, but like every time you would send him to a trainer, whether he was staying inside their house, like one guy kept him inside the house and gave him a bath after every time he got in the water, he would have a flare up of skin allergies. But when he would stay home with me, he was fine. So at first we thought it was a summertime thing. But then it turns out that it was just anytime he went somewhere else. So it kind of seemed like he had a little bit of anxiety around traveling or being away from home, which is weird because I haven't run into that as a trainer at all yet. But this dog was just, I don't know, it was just weird. And so I brought him home and, started looking into ways to kind of train him during the off season. He was kind of, are you familiar with hunt tests, like junior, senior, master level?
Yeah.
He was kind of a senior level dog when he got back from the trainer.
Okay.
And so I worked with him. Looking back now, like it's amazing that we got through the hunt test that we did with the training that I did with him, but because I had no idea what I was doing. But yeah, so that's kind of where that started. I signed up for a hunt test and kind of joined a retriever club and started learning that way. And then before you know it, I had a second lab because I wanted to run hunt tests and I wanted to train her completely on my own. And so that's kind of just where it started. And then I started having friends. I had, there was a litter of puppies that came out of my dog, my male. And I had three or four out of the litter that asked me if I could train them. And so I trained four or five of these litter mates, and ran them in tests and stuff. And then that's just kind of where it started. It was just real small at first. You know, I mean, I had five dogs at first.
Where did the hunt test come from? Did the trainer that you sent your dog to, did they do hunt tests and they just kind of said, this might be something you're interested in? Or what made you want them just to go from a personal hunting dog to that test scene?
That's actually a really good question. So the trainer did run hunt tests, but if I recall, we never talked about hunt tests. What I think happened was I remember this conversation with him because I kept in contact with him for a while there, just if I had questions about nitro. I remember looking up retriever clubs and I want to say I had heard about it somewhere when I was a kid. I don't remember exactly how that came about, but I do know I researched them on my own. And then I asked the trainer, I said, what level do you think my dog is at? And he said, well, he could definitely pass a senior test. And so I said, okay. And I signed up for a hunt test. I chickened out and didn't go and like just didn't show up. And so now looking back, I'm like, I should have called them to let them know. Like I literally just chickened out. And so, yeah. And so then, probably the next, like probably it was probably, that was probably in the fall, and in the spring or right before the spring, I actually joined a club and in a different area. And I was like, I'm going to actually like see what this is all about. And so I joined a club first before running a test, and I went out with some people and trained and went out with some field trial people. And it was really just funny because, you know how trainers are, they all want to give you advice on stuff and sometimes like too much advice or like advice that's not actually good for your dog personally. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so it was, looking back, it's just hilarious how it all unfolded. But, but yeah, that's where it started. And I ran him in senior and I got his title. And then I ran him in some master tests, but he had some issues with running blinds that he was pretty under control. But one of the big issues that I know came from the way that I trained him starting out was popping, which I don't know if you're familiar with that term or not.
No, explain it.
Okay, so popping. So when you blow your whistle, the dog sits.
Okay.
If you don't blow your whistle on a blind or a mark and they sit just for no reason, that's popping. And you don't want that. That's very like unattractive in the hunt test world. That's a big no-no. It's blinds are a forced command. So you don't want the dog to stop until you've blown your whistle.
Okay.
It's just perseverance basically. But, so he had kind of an issue with that and he marked really well, but anyway, I just never finished that out with him and that's okay. I'm totally happy with where I got with him and he was an amazing hunting dog and he was just a sweet dog. So, so that's where it started.
Would you say that you had like that the being part of the club was that you took advantage of that and that's how you progressed in your training, or did you have a specific mentor that kind of took you through all of it?
I didn't have a specific mentor. Actually what I did is I bought DVDs, Mike Lardy specifically, his training DVDs, and it's a full program. I mean, anybody can buy it. And, I also bought, you know, just quite a few, Art and Science of Handling a Retriever by Dave Rorem. There was a little list of DVDs that I bought and that's how I trained Dixie, my second personal dog.
That's incredible.
And I got a master title with her. Then I did have like a friend in the area that I would train with occasionally that was a pro trainer. So I learned a little bit from him and you learn a lot. Like if you go out there and train with a pro like that, I mean, you really learn so much because you watch multiple dogs do, you know, have the same issue over and over on a certain setup and you get to see that trainer kind of, okay, how does this person handle that? You know, What a lot of people don't understand when they've just had one dog, or like a big issue that I run into when I send my client dogs home is that people don't know, they don't know a good balance of pressure to use and they're afraid to use too much. Most of the time, honestly, they use too little, because they're afraid to mess the dog up. And then that just creates horrible bad habits. I mean, it just, you know, consistency with dogs is key. And I think people are a little afraid of that. And I don't blame them because that's the issue that I had with my first dog with the popping issues. I didn't want to apply too much pressure because I thought I'm already being hard on him. You know what I mean?
Right.
When in reality, I could have gotten him over that hump had I just stuck with it. You know what I mean? And really gone back and done forced to pile right and all that stuff. So, you know, it's so hard. You can't really teach clients like what that good balance is, because unless they sit and watch multiple dogs and they see the progression of say 6 months of training and they're there every day for it, they don't see start to finish. Like my kennel assistant, you know, he's 17 years old and some days, you know, like clients always want me to send them videos. And I'm like, look, if I don't get a good video of your dog, I'm not sending it, because some days they look like complete idiots.
And
that's
part
of training. Yeah.
Yes.
And so my kennel assistant, you know, bless his heart, he's there through all of it. And I'm like, bear with me, Henry, because in 2 weeks, you're going to come out here and throw these marks for this dog. And you're going to see a completely different dog. And he's been here a year now. And he's like, I am starting to see it. Like I see now, like all these dogs that come through and I'm like, he's like, that dog is never going to retrieve or never going to like understand this concept. But then through repetition, I mean, they really start to pick it up and then they look like a really polished dog by the end of it. You know,
I think this is so unique about you, Alex, is that you didn't necessarily always have somebody there to answer your questions. I mean, you know, people can read books, we can watch videos, but you still have that, well, what if this happens? And as you know, in training dogs,
yes,
what kind of situations happen all the time. They don't just go according to the video or the book. And
no, they don't.
And it's that way that you are obviously able to read dogs that you were able to adapt to that so naturally. And you know, when trainers in general send dogs home, you know, dogs been with the trainer for several months and then they get home and they're like, so how did you do that? You know, I just think that there's such a disconnect there because they can't read the dogs the same way you can. And they haven't had that level of a bond and they, you know, the dogs just aren't push button for them.
Yes. It's tough to watch. Honestly, I hate it because we always joke that like a dog might be running at a master level for the trainer, but when they go home for their owner, they only run at like a senior level. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And not the dog's fault. It's just, and it's not really, honestly, it's not so much the person's fault either. In some instances, it absolutely. I mean, there's tons of things you can do to learn, but unless you've watched multiple dogs, because honestly, I thank the first like probably 20 or 30 clients that I had so much every day because I was learning on their dogs, honestly. And I hate to say that, but I look back now and I'm like, I remember this issue I had with this certain dog when I first started training. And now like, I would absolutely know how to handle that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't at the time. And I feel bad about that. You know what I mean? But they trusted me. And they like, luckily, you know, went on a limb and sent their dog to me and are really pleased with their dog. But in my mind, I'm like, that dog could be so much better because had I known then what I know now, I could have handled that situation differently. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yep.
So, and you only learn that by seeing hundreds of dogs, you know, running every day, not every day, but throughout a course of, you know, a period of time. And our clients don't get the opportunity for that. And so in that way, that's not really their fault. I mean, you almost have to have that.
And I think sometimes the dogs even just revert back to how they were able to behave in that situation when they're put back into it. Like, oh,
absolutely.
I'm home. I can jump on the counters here. You know,
people always, that's the one thing that I always have to stress before they drop them off is that when you pick this dog back up, it will not jump on me, even if I begged it to, but it will jump on you as soon as you step out of your car. They absolutely remember their owners.
Right.
And they remember certain environments. So when you take them home, that's why I always suggest, go ahead and put a collar on them, an e-collar, before you get home. That way, as soon as you get home, you can start correcting bad behaviors that they are going to revert immediately back to because they're back home and they remember home.
Right. Right.
So it's a tough one for sure.
So what does your personal string of dogs look like right now? What do you have of your very own?
Right now I have a female lab that is 7, a male black lab, well, they're both black labs, that it just turned 2 today, and then my Jack Russell Gator, and he's 5.
Okay. So how did the famous Gator come into the scene here? Like, did you go searching for... Because you obviously grew up with the breed. So were you like, you know, I've seen the dog do some retrieving when growing up, but now I really want to get one that I can train and actually hunt with. Did you actively seek that out to have in your life?
Well, yes and no. I didn't do a whole lot of digging for him, but that... So I had Moose until 2016, I believe. And, he suddenly got lymphoma and they told me, oh, he's got 6 weeks to live unless you do chemo and all this stuff. And of course I chose to do the chemo, which I'm glad I did because he didn't feel sick or anything like that. He was very, he felt very comfortable for the 2 months that I had him after that. But at this point, I don't know that I would do that again. But I'm thankful for the time I had with him, because that's like the one dog that, you know, everybody says they have one dog they just really bonded with. And that was definitely mine, you know. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, he retrieved, and we would always take him hunting and stuff like that. But like I said, he would bring it back. Sometimes he would bring it back halfway and stop and chew on it. You know what I mean? And it was right. just, I mean,
he's a terrier.
He was a conversation piece. Like, he was hilarious. You know what I mean? Yeah. And yeah, he's a terrier. Like, I've seen someone on Instagram say about Gator, they're like, but how did you stop the head shake? Like, oh, he still does the head shake, just not on birds because he's been force fed. But you give that little sucker a toy, and he's like, "No, I'm going to shake you until you die." You know?
Yeah, that's the rodent. That's the rodent.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. And so when Moose got sick, I was, you know, I'm realistic. I was devastated about Moose. Probably to like too much. But anyway, when he got sick, I was like, okay, the next Jack Russell that I have, I'm going to try and train it formally. And if it doesn't work out, then I'm just going to have a little, you know, just a house dog. And that's fine with me, because I love having a little dog to ride around in the truck with me, you know, and they're hilarious. I mean, it's not like when you go to research a lab and you're like, if this dog doesn't work out, you're getting sold, buddy. You know what I mean? I was
right.
like, it's fine. I don't care either way.
Yeah.
And so, I actually contacted the breeder that we got Moose from. And I said, in a couple of years, I'm going to reach out to you. And I just wanted to see if you had these bloodlines still. And turns out it was probably 3 months after Moose died. So it was really quick, but she sent me, an email and said, I have this little male and he's got the markings like you want. And he's like 6 weeks old right now. So he's ready to go home pretty soon. And he's related to Moose, kind of in the distantly, but still related. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, the way it happened was like it was almost like a God thing. Like, I started crying when I got the email, because I didn't plan on having another Jack Russell that soon. I mean, I was so attached to Moose, but, anyway, so I actually ended up with him. I ended up with him like a week later or something like that. It might've even been less than that. And, this isn't why I named him Gator, but he was in Aledo, Texas, which is like 5 hours away. And we traded a guy, a gator hunt, to come up and bring Gator. So he brought him, he drove him up, and he killed an 8-foot alligator. And I have a little picture of Gator sitting on top of it at 7 weeks old. And
oh my gosh.
I already had the name before we did that, but it, yeah, I mean, that's how that happened. Yeah.
So that is so crazy. Like, I envisioned you were like, okay, I want this little dog, 4 inches of leg, to carry back a big duck for me. And so when I go pick out a puppy in this litter, I'm going to look for these specific things. And that's just,
no, he was the last one. He was the last one in the litter. As a matter of fact, I've never hand selected a dog out of a litter. Every single dog I've had has been the last one available.
Mm-hmm.
And, I just personally, to me, it's all about the training. You can certainly look for certain qualities in a puppy, but to me, it's all about the training. And every single dog I've had has been the last dog in the litter.
Yeah. Well, so. and to be completely fair, a good trainer can polish a turd. So.
Yes. Well, not always, but most of the time.
Most of the time.
Don't
yes.
say that, because then people are going to be bringing me all kinds of stuff now.
No turds allowed.
Yeah. Well, I have a lot of people contact me about different random off-breeds. Because
I bet they do.
Yeah, and they think that I personally just enjoy training off-breed, like poodles and Chesapeakes and stuff like that. And I'm like, I'm not going to lie to you. No, if you want to bring me a black lab every time, that'd be great. That'd be great. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, I mean, obviously we've done some really good things with random breeds like German Shorthairs and stuff like that. But yeah, it's definitely tough. It's not easy work at all.
Right.
Gator was pretty easy, but I got lucky with him. Every other Jack Russell I've had that was brought to me by someone else did not work out as far as retrieving goes.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. You know, I mean, we have breeds like Labradors that were bred specifically for these purposes. And
right.
And so at some point, I mean, these off breeds that, yeah, they can carry stuff in their mouths, they can bring it back, but you're still going to have struggles throughout that process.
Yeah.
And do you find that you have that with Gator? I mean, even now you said he's 5 years old.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, I mean, are you constantly like having to remind him and do drills with him? Whereas like the Labrador, you can put him away for a year and he'd remember what to do.
So Gator's a weird situation. Most people don't know this because they've never hunted with Gator. He is extremely practical as far as it's really funny because those little legs can fly. and people think he drags birds back. No, he picks them up and he carries them. He scoops them up just as fast as a lab. I mean, we field hunt mostly. And so I'm telling you, I really don't hunt my labs a lot because I run tests with them. So I just bring Gator.
Wow.
And I don't care what bad habits he picks up because he doesn't run tests. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But here's the deal with Gator. So I can't tell you how many dogs at this point. I don't know like the exact number of dogs that I've trained in the short period of time that I've been doing this because I haven't been training for long. I mean, professionally, like only 5 years, but still Gator has been the hardest dog to steady of any dog that I've worked with. Not kidding. Like you have to be on him constantly about breaking. He won't break in training most of the time, but hunting, I tie him up every time we go.
Okay.
So,
right.
I mean, he is at like in that way, he's got that Jack Russell, just like, I'm not going to do what you want me to do. This is no, I am meant to just go. Like as soon as the birds get close, I'm supposed to catch them out of the air. Like that's what he thinks. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so he's definitely different in that way. As far as training goes, he is a marking little fool, but you take him hunting and luckily we basically everything we kill is on like really like just a dirt field. So like he can see them, they're sight marks.
Okay.
But you take him hunting and he gets so excited about it that he'll get out there and he'll pop, you know, what I was telling you Nitro used to do. He'll pop and look at me like, where do I go now? And it's hilarious. Like we laugh about it. We think it's hilarious, but that's one issue that he has that you will never see in training. You put him in a marking situation, he'll go 200 yards before he stops, in training. So that's the main issue. And honestly, you really can't correct it because he knows the difference between hunting and training.
Sure.
And it's really not something that I can correct. Honestly, it's not really bad enough, because of where we hunt, like we don't hunt cover. I mean, we're always in a peanut field or something like that. And so he doesn't have a huge, I mean, he's still just as practical and he's hilarious and I really enjoy him. So, he's definitely different in that way. Like a lab, you're definitely going to run into more issues hunting than you would in training that you're going to have to like go back and correct in the off season. But for the most part, like they're pretty level headed, most of them, not all of them. But Gator, yeah, he definitely gets wigged out. He's like, I'm so excited right now. I don't even know what to do.
And I love the fact that you have like senior hunter and master hunter dogs to choose from, but Gator's your first choice.
Nope. He goes, I'll tell you, like he honestly, he goes 90% of the time. We hunt almost every day during the season and he goes 90% of the time. Like
wow.
Unless we hunt water and then I'll take a lab. But my boyfriend has his own dog too and he trains dogs too. So he will usually take his dog and I'll take Gator. And so what's good about Gator is, you know, if a lot of times we'll hunt in Tyvek suits or something like that, and we don't really want to deal with like a dog hide because it really doesn't fit in with what our spread looks like. And so we'll just bring Gator and let him sit out because he's white. He looks like a snow goose. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
right.
So Gator in that way is kind of has a little advantage. You know, he gets invited more often because of that.
And I mean, is a portion of it too, just because you have complete joy just watching that little dog work his heart out for you?
Oh, yes. No, absolutely. I mean, honestly, my dogs that I run tests with, I don't really feel guilty not taking them as much because they run tests. They train 5 days a week. Like they love what they do in training and at tests just as much as they would hunting. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it every day. And so Gator doesn't really get that. Like he doesn't run tests, but I do train him. Mostly, I say that this summer I've had a lot of dogs. And so Gator and then like my personal dog don't train every day because I may not have time, but yeah, I mean, so that's kind of it. I mean, I love having him there. And I mean, you know, sitting in a layout blind with Gator in there is just like really cozy too. You know,
is he your house dog too? Or is, does he in the kennel?
Yes. No, he sleeps in the bed at night.
I love it.
Yeah. He's very spoiled.
You're breaking all the rules with him.
Absolutely. All of them. Yeah. I mean, people ask me a lot when they come over, they're like, so how does like Gator mind around the kennels? I'm like, he doesn't listen to a word I say. Like if you were to go off Gator's obedience and say, well, this is a testament to how she trains, like you'd be like, okay, she's a horrible trainer because this dog does not listen. I mean, he totally knows that he rules the kennels. You know what I mean?
Oh my gosh. That's awesome. What kind of training did you do with him? Did you decide to formally train him?
Yes, I did. I did it. Like if you were to watch Mike Lardy's Total Retriever Training series, mm-hmm. I did absolutely everything with him. I did force fetch. We did force fetch, force to pile, pee pattern, swim by. I even modified like a little swim by pond for him. I did this little tiny finger off this pond and did swim by with him. So, I mean, he's done everything. He did pattern blinds. He did everything.
Did he struggle more in any portion of that force fetch than like some of your other dogs typically do?
He honestly didn't. Force fetch was really fast. He's timid, but he's high drive. So like if you're in a hunting situation, I mean, you can turn your collar all the way up if you want. It's not going to affect that dog. He's still going to break. You know what I mean?
He's hardcore.
But like if you're, yeah. But if, yeah, he's like, nope, I will take any amount of pressure you want to throw at me. I'm still going to get that bird before you say
oh
go.
My God. Oh
yeah,
my God.
Yeah. But as far as like horse fetch goes and stuff, like when they're in a situation where they're not excited, you know, there's different levels of pressure based on the dog's excitement level. And so for force fetch, he was very easy. He was pretty timid. I mean, you didn't have to apply a lot of pressure to get him to fetch the bumper and stuff like that. And, birds, he already naturally picked up. I don't even know that I even forced him to birds. I just, once he was forced to bumpers, he naturally just delivered birds to hand after that. And, you know, if he drops a bird, you can tell him fetch and he'll pick it right back up. But, but yeah, so he was honestly pretty easy. He was easier than a lot of the dogs that I've had, as far as, well, especially as far as off breeds go, like pointers or something like that. But,
I love that you're calling the short hairs and the pointers off breeds.
Right. I guess like off breed, that's just like the term I use for anything that's not a lab because I don't know what other people would call them, but you know, Chesapeakes, pointers, I mean, they're good dogs. I'm not like, it's not an offensive term. That's what I always, when people call me, I'm like, well, if they're not a lab, you're looking at probably an extra month of training just because they take longer, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
doesn't mean they can't get the job done.
With a terrier, though, I mean, swimming doesn't just come naturally for them, or a love of water. How was Gator with that? Did you have to do like a introduction to water, or did he just do it?
No, he did not like water at first. Okay. He was really, really freaked out by it. So I took him to my friend. One of my friends is a pro trainer down in Southeast Texas. And I took him out there. He had some little, like, for Gator, as like a 9 week old puppy or whatever, you had to find like an inch of water somewhere. Hmm. And so I took him to like this little slough kind of off the side of his pond that was very shallow, and just kind of threw some bumpers across it. That's how we got started. So he was just touching the water at that point. Like, it was just covering his feet, you know?
Yeah.
And then I took him to kind of a beach area where you could walk into the water gradually, and where I could walk with him. And so then he got used to that, and then he was okay. Now, I will say, we have run into, I mean, you can't hunt him in the water. You can, but it better be during like teal season or something. It better be 75 degrees. Like, it's funny, because he'll train in cold weather in the water. But for whatever reason, it's that same little weird thing about him that, like, when he's in a hunting situation, he gets kind of nervous and he won't get in the water if it's cold. And he also gets kind of nervous around like vegetation, which rightfully so. I mean, his legs are so small, so he can't swim very well through vegetation. And
right.
So I don't hunt him in the water. The only time I've taken him up there to Nebraska, to Jake Latondras's place up there a couple times. And, you know, those little sloughs off the river are so small that a lot of times you're shooting birds that are on land. And so they just land on your side of the slough or whatever. And so he'll go and get them there. But you know what? He did get in the water there when actually Lee was there too. Lee Chose and yeah. Luke and Zach, and all those guys. And he went and got a big greater Canada goose across the slough.
Oh my gosh.
And we were like, everybody there knows of his fear of water when it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like Lee's dog, Calf, was there. And it was as if Gator was like, I'm going to show you guys, like, I'm getting that goose. Cap's not getting that goose. And so he got in there and got it. And it was hilarious. I'm like, man, it is so cold out here. It's like 17 degrees, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, the drive that sounds like that dog has and the heart, I mean, that doesn't surprise me.
No, Jack Russells in general, gosh, that's just how they are. But yes, right. He does. He has a huge heart. But yeah, that whole breed's like that.
Does he struggle at all, like, being loud? Because he is, like, when you have him tethered and he sees birds go down, do you have any vocal issues with him?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I wondered. Yeah.
Absolutely. He's, honestly, so, like, when we train, he's very vocal. He gets very excited about training.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very, very vocal. When we hunt, like, he's vocal at the line. When we hunt, he's honestly not vocal. Like, if you're just sitting there and birds are working, he's quiet and he'll watch them. And sometimes he'll be vocal, but not really all the time. But then when you shoot, if you for some reason let another dog go and don't let him go, you're going to hear about it. And if it were a lab, I would be like, I'm not taking you hunting anymore. Like, this is too annoying. But because it's him, for whatever reason, it's just funny to me. And I'm just like, I can't even help. Like, the fact that you want those birds that bad, like, I don't even care. You know what I mean? A little out of control, but.
So that's a common thing. So I do mainly upland hunting, but yeah. Like, one of my first dogs, I took her duck hunting with my brother, and she was just whining the whole time. And he's like, you need to leave. So we ended up leaving.
You're not invited back.
Yeah, we got kicked out of the blind. That was funny. That was a quick day of duck hunting for my first time. But is that an issue that you see as a trainer, and how do you help with that situation? How do you settle a dog down but not take the love out of it for them?
So a dog like that has that much drive and they're whining and they're just so ready to go, there's not a lot usually with a dog like that you can do to take the drive out of them. You're not going to have that issue. So yeah. Pressure, as far as that goes, is not really an issue. I've had a couple dogs that I trained for some friends. And when we went, they came to me and said, hey, you know, they never whined in training. They said they're kind of whining, you know, when we hunt now. Mm-hmm. And one of the dogs was even barking before you would send them. And I said, okay, well, I was guiding hunts for my dad that year. And so I said, I'm not going to bring a dog. We're going to hunt Eli. And then the next day we'll hunt Ruby. And so we took, I can't remember Ruby the first day. She whined a little bit, but when I got beside her versus the owner, it virtually stopped.
Huh.
Because she knew what I was going to tolerate versus what he was going to tolerate and what he allows, what habits he allows. And same thing with Eli. The next day we took Eli and he was worse. He was a lot worse than Ruby. And I remember a little bit of whining, but I just sit, Nick, sit. I mean, it's indirect pressure. You're not pressuring them, telling them quiet. You're giving them the sit command and you're nicking them for it. Because what they're doing when they're whining is not sitting, because sit means sit, do not move your paws, do not whine, be still. Like sit means sit.
Right.
And I can't stress that enough. And I always try to explain that to clients and they just don't really abide by that law. But anyway, he virtually stopped. My dad actually went and he said, that's a different dog today.
Huh. Interesting.
Than when the other guy was running him. And so, it's what you allow. It's honestly a lot of times what you allow. But another thing about whining, because certainly there are dogs that are just going to be whiners and you're going to struggle with that your whole life, their whole life. But a lot of the problem I think, is people hunting their dogs when they're too young is where that whining comes in. And then also not being, like when you hear a little peep, like I took my dog, dog Boss, he's 2 years old. He was like a year and a half last hunting season. He was probably a little under a year and a half. And I took him a couple of times. And so that's what I did. Okay. So I knew I was going to run him in tests. So I was like, I'm not going to take him too much, but he's kind of a lower drive dog. So I really needed to take him hunting to kind of pump him up. And so I did, and I did have a couple times where he tried to whine on me, but the key is right when it happens, correct it. Don't let it go because it'll just get worse. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And then he stopped. I mean, he was like, oh wait, we don't do that in training. Like, she's not letting me do it here. This is no different than when we train. Mm-hmm. And so, but the key really is like I said, making sure that they're mature enough and that you guys are on the same page as far as obedience goes before taking them hunting.
Right. So go into that a little bit about what you said. It's, you know, that typically comes because they hunted a lot when they were younger. And I mean, do you think a lot of these obedience drills and the basics should be with bumpers, with dummies? So just knowing that you probably have a high drive dog, that's not going to be an issue to try to build that. Or what would you suggest?
No, I mean, honestly, most all of our yard drills are done with bumpers. anyway. Mm-hmm. But like when we train with birds, train with guns, you know, big loud pops in the field and stuff like that. The unfortunate thing is that hunting and training can never be the exact same. Like there's just no way to make training like hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And, so really the main thing, honestly, is repetition. So we come out, okay. So let's say you have a dog at 4 months old. I mean, I'm sorry, after 4 months of training. After 4 months of training, they're going to be steady. They're going to deliver to hand. You know, they're going to kind of understand decoys out in the water, and retrieving off a dog stand and stuff like that. Hmm. But they're not, they haven't had the repetition of every day we come out, I sit until my name is called. I don't move. I don't make a peep. You know, she could say five other dog names and I'm still not going to move. Like the key, in my opinion, is the repetition of this is the routine every time. And the further you go in training, so like once you have a senior level dog, they're going to see the excitement of watching another dog work, for example. And they're going to get very used to that because a lot of times, like when I go out and run drills, like pattern blinds, I'll bring three or four dogs just on the four-wheeler and the other two dogs will have to lay down while I run one dog on the pattern blind.
Hmm.
So they're understanding that if it's not my turn, it's not my turn. And I just lay here, I chill out, it'll happen eventually. But when you have a dog that after 4 months of training, that's usually around 9 months old. First of all, they're still very much a puppy. And also they haven't had as much repetition. They haven't been doing it for as long. So it's still so exciting for them. And their steadiness is not going to be absolutely amazing. It's going to be, you're going to have to watch them. You know what I mean? You just, you kind of get what you pay for as far as how much training you want to do. And if you're someone that can, that knows and learns the commands and knows how to keep your dog steady when you shoot, you know, the first couple of times you go out, you want to make sure that you're not shooting and you're watching your dog and making sure they're not going to try and break because it's a new situation, you know? So that's kind of, it's just repetition in my opinion. The more they do it, the more they learn that I can just chill out. I'm fine.
Right.
And when they see that in the field and they go hunting for the first time, they just have that much more obedience than they did after, let's say, 4 months of training. You know, like Boss, the one that I had, that the male that I have, I didn't hunt him until he was running blinds very consistently, honoring, running multiple marks, because I'm, unless it's a really, really low drive dog, if it is, I'm going to tell you, take it dove hunting and don't even let it, don't even make it sit. Like, let it run around, let it have as much fun as it wants to have. But if it's a high drive dog, I'll tell people, if I were you, I would not hunt that dog until it's a year and a half old.
Yeah. It's, gosh, Alex, that is, that's so hard.
Yeah, for sure. Because if you only have one dog, you're like, dang it, this dog's only alive for 12 or 13 years. Like, I want to enjoy my dog. You know what I mean? So I get it. And I tell people, I'm like, I don't blame you. You know, do what you want to do. That's just, if you're really worried about that whining, that's the main reason I tell people to wait, is if they're really going to be bothered by a whiny dog. Because a lot of times that's what you'll end up with if you hunt them too early, in my opinion.
I have a 4 month old cocker puppy and the girl is loaded with drive and it's killing me. I mean, we do so much obedience work, but I'm like, you know, hunting season's now 2 weeks away.
Yeah.
And like, I'm like, well, it probably won't hurt her if I just drop her in the woods one time. Like, you know, I'm so upset.
It's easier said than done. I took gator hunting super early and because I was like, oh, this is so exciting. Like he loves to retrieve. I take him. So I did that. And honestly, I don't think with Gator it would have mattered. He's so whiny anyway, and he's also a Jack Russell. So I think I still would have had those issues. But I will say I had my first dog, Nitro, he didn't hunt till he was probably a year and a half or two, maybe. And he never whined. He was quiet. That was one thing I loved about him. But Dixie, my second dog, I hunted her at 9 months old because I was so excited. Same thing. I totally get it.
Right.
And I swear that if I had not done that, I would not have a whining dog. I have struggled with whining with her since that day because of that, I think. But if it's like you said, I mean, you know, you have one dog or you may have multiple dogs and you still want to take that dog hunting. I don't blame you one bit. And I would never be like, why do you have that dog in the field? I don't care. You know what I mean? It doesn't bother me. I just always recommend that because I'm like, man, I did, you know.
It's just that tempting thing. I have plenty of other dogs I'm going to be taking out. But it's just like I have this new little toy that is – looks so promising, and now I have to wait a year till I have her obedience down.
But you're doing mostly upland stuff, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if that were the case with a dog like that, now I don't know a whole lot about upland training, but I feel like a lot of their stuff is more instinct. Mm-hmm. Would that be the case? I mean, as far as
It is, but to have an out of control cocker is going to be a really annoying thing too. And I had Jordan Horrick on a while ago on an episode, and he really pushed that, like, don't take them hunting on birds until you have that obedience down, have that foundation down, and you can control it.
Yeah. As far as the upland stuff goes, I could see the benefit to both. Like, you know, taking them early and letting them hunt with a couple older dogs and kind of learning the ropes, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know as far as tracking dogs go. And like, I have a lot of friends that hunt hogs with dogs and stuff like that. And I mean, that's totally different than upland hunting, but that's how those dogs kind of learn, is they'll put a young dog with some older dogs and they don't worry about it as much as I would. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, nope, because obedience is such an important thing for me, but for the type of hunting that we're doing.
Yeah. And I think that's a trainer mentality too. I mean, like my husband won't shoot a bird unless the dog has pointed it and held steady.
Yeah. And that's, so, yes.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I'm wasting it. I have this awesome training opportunity with my dog. And if I shoot this bird and he hasn't seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. So. You had mentioned earlier the differences in what you get hunting and what you get when you're training and testing. And do you find that you yourself, that you're more forgiving in your dog work when you are hunting?
For sure. Yeah. I'm a little bit more, I'm less forgiving with the dogs I know I'm running tests with, but a lot of that, I won't put them in a situation that I think will be crazy for them, where they're going to pick up some bad habits that you wouldn't want them to have at a test. Mm-hmm. So like Boss, I probably hunted him 6 times last year, and I hunted him over water with like 3 other people. And so, when we hunt in the field, you might shoot like 5 to 10, sometimes 20 birds out of, I mean, like sometimes there's crazy numbers that hit the ground. And so you're going to be promoting a lot of switching, or, you know, picking up a dead bird, seeing a cripple, dropping the dead bird, going and chasing that cripple or whatever. And when you're with other people, especially when it's their land, you're not going to go, hold on while these 500 geese try and work our spread, because I need to work my dog and make sure, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So you don't really want to, like, you kind of don't want to step on toes in that way. Like, so you just kind of want to do it their way, like get all the birds picked up, jump back in the blind as fast as you can. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When we're duck hunting over water, it's usually 1 or 2 birds that hit the water at a time. They're usually far enough apart that it's kind of more of a hunt test scenario. So go pick up the last bird down and then come back, go pick up the, you know, the memory bird. And so, I brought him probably 5 times and just kept it very, like, just made sure his obedience was good, didn't let him break, that kind of stuff. But yeah, like as far as Gator goes and Dixie, my dog that she's done running tests at this point, I'm just like, do your thing, like get the bird and come back. I don't really care. And like, let's say okay, so on a mark, there's an area for the fall and they're supposed to hunt that area without you having to handle them to it. The mark is something they're supposed to find on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But in a hunting situation, if you know where the bird is and your dog's over there hunting, you know, in out in left field for the bird, and you know that you can just stop it and cast it over to the right real quickly and get it to the bird, you're not going to sit there and let it hunt until it picks up the bird. So like, that's the kind of stuff that in a hunting situation, I'm just like, okay, go ahead and whistle them, send them over and get the bird and come back. You know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah, definitely it is different. It's definitely, a different situation.
Are you still hunting big game, or do you spend all your hunting time on birds?
I really don't hunt big game at all anymore. I honestly, I would, if I had the time. I love it. It's so much fun. You know, I love to elk hunt and I love to deer hunt. I would love to go back to Africa. I just don't have the time, and it's really hard as a dog trainer to, you know, leave for 2 or 3 weeks and you've got 30 dogs sitting in a kennel, you know what I mean? So it's kind of hard, but really the duck hunting is all duck and goose hunting and dove hunting, is really all I do anymore. And honestly, if that's all I ever did for the rest of my life, like I would sleep easy. I love that. I mean, that's definitely my passion. The big game and all that stuff's amazing to me, but I don't, like, if I had a choice, I mean, people have asked me this before. I'm like, if I had a choice to shoot, you know, a 200 inch deer, or there was a loaded field full of mallards, like, I would go duck hunting.
Right.
You guaranteed me that deer was going to come in that morning. I'd be like, nah, I'm going to go over here.
I love it.
I can't lie. That's definitely what I love.
So when hunting season comes, do you try to send a lot of the client dogs home so you can spend that time, you know, with your own dogs to enjoy it? Or do you keep a full string of client dogs as well?
Well, it honestly usually works itself out, because for whatever reason, obviously all the older dogs go home to hunt, you know, like all the older test dogs and stuff like that. But even like, we just don't get as many calls this time of year. I guess people want to, you know, when they get a dog and they think, oh, well, it's going to be 6 months old or whatever, I'll just take it hunting. And mm-hmm. and they do. They take it before it has any obedience and all that stuff. And that's fine. I mean, we can fix that after they come, if they bring them after the fact, no big deal. But that just kind of seems to be the case. It kind of slows down this time of year.
Okay.
So I usually have, like, right now, I think I have like, I don't know, 19, 18 dogs or something like that. But during hunting season, I usually only have like 8 to 10.
Okay. And did I see a picture of Gator retrieving a crane?
Yes. He has picked up cranes and he will bring them back. He does kind of drag the cranes because he trips on the wing. But I have seen him. We shot a crane one time that his wings were just kind of, they weren't real loose. It was almost like it was the way he hit the ground or something like that. And his wings just kind of stayed tucked up, and Gator picked him up and brought him all the way back. And I was like, oh my God, that is insane. But that was crazy. The only time. Every other time, I don't really, if I go crane hunting anymore, I don't really take Gator. I just brought him a couple times, 'cause I was like, I just kind of want to see how he would do. And then now I'm like, I'm not gonna put his little body through that.
Yeah. Well, and I hear stories, because I've never done it, but they're like, you probably don't want to take your dog crane hunting, because, you know, if they're injured, they have.
Yeah.
Have you seen that or heard of that?
I have seen that.
Okay.
The main thing, if you're going to take them, you just want to make sure you have a steady dog and, you know, you have a dead crane that you're sending them on. You know what I mean?
Got it. So, yep.
I mean, I've always taken my dogs crane hunting. I've never used the goggles or anything. I just, less is more for me. I don't need more junk in the field than what I already have. I tried the GoPro thing at one point and It became way too technical. I was like, no, I can't deal with that. Like, I already have so many other things. And so, I will take my dogs crane hunting for sure, but I'm usually just really careful that they're not crippled, because I've definitely seen them peck dogs, and I've had it happen where like my dog picked up a crippled crane on accident and I didn't realize that it was not dead. And I've never had anything bad happen. But yeah, they're mean, and you have to be very careful. That it's no joke. I mean, they really are mean if you aren't careful. So,
okay. And is it true that, like what they say about crane as far as taste, are they delicious?
They are. They're very good. I mean, honestly, I used to eat ducks all the time, and I'm not a huge fan of ducks anymore. I mean, cranes though are very good. And you know, if you cook them right, they're definitely the ribeye of the sky.
So how do you prepare yours?
Usually we would just cook it like a steak.
Okay, sure.
So season it up just like a steak and put it on the grill because they're big enough. Honestly, with cranes, I think that's the only way we've ever done it. Mm-hmm. Like with ducks, you know, oh gosh, we'd prepare them all different. We'd do like teal and gravy and all, you know, obviously duck poppers and dove poppers and stuff like that. But cranes though, I mean, usually we just cook them just like a steak.
Well, if they're that good, then yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then for sure. So what is your favorite waterfowl recipe then?
We smoked ducks one time. Well, not one time. We did it a couple different times, but just plucked ducks on the smoker was probably the best way I've ever had them. We used to put like injectable butter and Slap Ya Mama seasoning and all different kinds of stuff. And I mean, that was probably honestly the best that I've had as far as ducks go.
Cool. I'm always looking for good waterfowl recipes.
I can't tell you how to do. Honestly, I'm not a great cook.
Yeah.
And my boyfriend will tell you that. Always cook the food. So yeah, but we really, honestly, we don't cook we use a lot of our ducks for training because we're up there during hunting season. And we're training every day, well, 5 days a week. And so I'll use my ducks for training a lot of times because, I mean, I don't have any birds, you know, I don't buy live flyers or anything like that while I'm up there. So,
okay.
And then we have a lot of friends that come up too, and we'll take our take their birds and stuff like that. So, but the main thing, honestly, when we're up there is just time. I mean, we cook really pretty easy meals and stuff like that because we're usually like hunting and then scouting and then hunting and scouting and training. And like, it's crazy. So, but like another thing I used to do with my geese all the time is goose jerky.
Yeah.
Which is good. I love doing that because I mean, you can turn anything into jerky and it's good. Pretty easy recipe. I had one of those little, what were those things called?
That like the dehydrators.
It was just this little simple dehydrator. It was like stacked, you know, little plastic thing, you know what I mean? And it was from Cabela's. I can't remember the name of it, but it wasn't expensive. It was maybe $100 or less. And I love that thing. I used to put all kinds of stuff in there. I mean, when we would kill divers, I'd do like diver jerky.
Yeah.
Which
okay.
I know some people are into, but
sure.
I used to cook them.
That's a great
idea.
You
know, a lot. I can say. Yeah, for sure.
I wanted to ask, because you were just talking about like scouting, and with all your experience with duck hunting, what is some of the best advice that you have for people to have a successful duck hunt? Like as far as the scouting, and do you get really into decoys and the calling, time of day? What do you think?
It just really depends on the situation. Honestly, we don't call a whole lot at all. But the type of hunting that we do is a little different. I mean, if you're in a marsh situation or hunting over water, it's definitely different. Like, we'll call more. but definitely the conditions is, I mean, honestly, you can do all you want with decoys, but if you're not hidden well and you don't have good conditions, then you're kind of out of luck a lot of times. So, I mean, that's usually the main thing for us, is just getting the conditions right. I mean, there's times that we won't choose to hunt a particular spot because the conditions aren't right for it that day, and we'll just wait. You know what I mean?
And that's something that comes with the experience, that you're able to recognize, like, this isn't going to be good today.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of know, like, you know, a lot of people think that hunting ducks, they relate that to like a cloudy, rainy day. And that might be the situation in some conditions, but like, if you're hunting over water, you want sunshine and wind. You know what I mean? Cloudy and rainy is terrible, because they can pick you out. First of all, I mean, rainy's not good, because a lot of times they don't really fly if it's real rainy. But foggy is terrible. I mean, you know, if you're in a spot they're coming to, great. But what are you going to do if it's foggy and they're trying to see your decoys and they can't? You know what I mean? So it's the, like, that's, you know, like, a lot of times if it's not going to be sunny and windy, we won't hunt over water, because there's just no point. You're just going to kind of waste it. So it kind of depends. It's really just weather, though.
Okay. And what would you say is, like, your best piece of go-to gear that you're like, this is the best, this is very necessary, I need this on every hunt? What would that be?
My e-collar.
Okay.
Definitely my e-collar. If I have a dog, for sure.
Yeah.
But usually, like, as far as clothing goes, I wear bibs like 90% of hunting season, because I train in them. I mean, they're waterproof, so I'll hunt in them. My bibs, I love my bibs. I don't know.
Bibs are the best.
I don't know. It's like a comfort thing, right?
Right.
Like, it's like pajamas almost. You're like, this is so easy. I just throw these on and I'm instantly warm. Like,
yeah. What brand of bibs do you wear?
I have the Sitka bibs, the women's bibs.
Okay, the women's,
and I absolutely love them. Yes. And
awesome.
You know, they're not super thick, so you can move around really well in them. I mean, they're a favorite of mine, for sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Alex. You were just a pleasure to talk with and pick your brain from. And I mean, man, those of us listening, like, I would love to see gator work in person. I love, you know, I always say, like, oh, I'd love to. Yeah. I always say, like, I'm not a bird dog snob by any means. I just love to watch a good dog work. And hey, if it comes in 4 inches of legs, then so be it. I love the heart of.
He likes to prove himself. That's for sure.
I'm sure. Does he like to have an audience?
Oh yeah. I always tell people, I'm like, he's always looking for a better deal. Like, he would totally go home with anybody that, you know, that goes hunting with us. He's like, I mean, if you'll take me home, I'll be a part of your family. Like, he's always trying to show off, and he likes to, like, act really well behaved in front of people. He's like, I'm so good, and look at my eyes, you know? And I'm like, no, you're not like that.
I love it. Tell us how we can find you and Gator and follow your adventures, and a website for people that might be interested in you doing some training.
Yeah. So the website is www.oneshotretrievers.com. And our Instagram is @oneshotretrievers. And then Gator's Instagram is @Gator_theduckdog. So that's pretty much it. I have Facebook too, but I mean, you would just have to look up Alex Brittingham. And then we have a OneShot Retrievers Facebook page as well.
Perfect. And contact Alex for all your non-typical hunting dog training.
Right. No, don't say that. No. No, I don't mind them. Every dog.
I'm just kidding.
They're all unique. So.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I hope you have a great hunting season.
Thanks. You too. You'll have to come down and hunt with us.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. Alex Brittingham and her Jack Russell Terrier Gator are the real deal. If you have a non-typical breed that you waterfowl or upland hunt with, I'd love to see it, so send me a photo. Check out the show notes for a link to training videos that Alex mentioned in this episode, as well as links to connect with her and Gator. Be sure not to miss out on the 12 Days of Hunting giveaway now until September 1st. Please support the awesome sponsors and partners of this podcast and the organizations that are working hard to conserve the birds you're chasing after and the public lands in which you hunt.